And good morning. Hi, this is Dr. Morgan. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. At exactly 6:13 this morning, I was in the parking lot and I was doing a little bit of reading, and I was looking toward the north. I just glanced up, and what it looked like, a helicopter. You know how there's a there's hospitals, but they have these life flight helicopters, and I just knew it was like the bright light of a helicopter. Well, once it started kind of speeding up, I saw maybe 5 seconds of it. It started breaking up into pieces like a giant meteorite, and I thought back the last time that I saw something like that, I was in Houston, back in the middle 80s, where I saw some type of rocket booster burn up in the atmosphere, which looked like a big flaming garbage truck coming through the sky. Anyway, about the same thing. I wonder what it was. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you this morning?
Oh, man, you sound like you're fabulous. I'm about half as good as you.
I'm working.
Oh, well, you like work, don't you?
Yeah, because it pays the bills, and then I get to come and see you.
Well, how far do you have to travel today?
I'm going to Malakoff today.
Oh, there's a bunch of sweet people in Malakoff, aren't there?
Oh, yes, there are. I passed you yesterday about 2, a little before 1 o'clock.
Yeah, I heard a horn blaring for like 30 seconds straight. Was
30,
that you?
40, 50, maybe an hour. I don't know.
Did you let up when you left town?
Yeah. I just wanted people to know I was coming through and, was leaving a message for the great Dr. Morgan. Was that good?
That was fabulous, yes.
Hey, I have a quick question for you, and then I will let you get on to the rest of your program. Our mutual friend and I have this question as to the difference between refined and unrefined coconut oil.
Okay. You want me to do that off after you hang up or now?
No, because I might have a question.
Well, let's put
this. I'm not letting you off the hook that easy.
Well, I was just going to quickly say, find out on your own and then hang up, and that wouldn't do it, would it? What you do is when you have the unrefined coconut oil, you're preserving nutrients. It's more nutrient dense, which is what you want. So if you're going to, let's just say, for example, a person says, I am trying to improve my metabolism. I want to improve the health of my organs. Mm-hmm. I want to clean my arteries. I want to scrub my brain clean. I want to do just all sorts of things. Coconut oil at 3 tablespoons a day would probably get a person a lot closer to reaching those goals. So what you have is when you walk in the store, you have a choice of highly refined processed coconut oil, which I realize if you were to, look on the shelf and you see a jar or a bottle of coconut oil that's just completely clear and it's in a liquid form, I can guarantee you that's heavily processed. I'm not saying it's bad. But if I had my choice, when you have the raw, virgin, unprocessed coconut oil, what you're doing is you're getting a lot of the accessory nutrients that come along with it. You're getting all the splendid rainbow of all the nutrients that are found in coconut oil. They haven't been removed. So in my mind, that is the very best way to go. So the least adulteration or processing that we can get, the better off we are.
Okay, and this is why I wanted to stay on with you. Is refined coconut oil better than other oils to cook with for people who don't like the taste or smell of coconut?
Yes.
It's not going to put bad stuff into your system, I guess is what I'm asking.
Well, it's like anything else. Fat is actually very, very good for you. And, of course, I know you've heard me say this a number of times. If you look at the breakdown of mother's breast milk, which I realize that may not sound relevant, but if you look at the breakdown, it's exactly 54% pure fat. And I've got to believe that's God's complete, total design right there. I have nothing to do with it. So the way the human body is, it's going to make sure that it's producing high-quality nutrition for a baby, even if sometimes mom doesn't eat real well. Mm-hmm. The 54% of the calories that go into a child's digestive tract, they need to be from fat. So I think we could learn something from that. If the dominant calorie and mother's breast milk is fat. What does that tell us about how we're eating today? Is the dominant calorie need to be highly refined sugar?
No. The answer is no. I'll say no, but boy, the answer, I would love to say yes.
Well, I would too. earlier this morning, Scott, I was looking at a chart on a glycemic index, but my attention was drawn over to the beans and peas. And there were two. There was the green lentils, yellow lentils, and the red lentils. And so if a spoonful of sugar has a glycemic index, they give it the number 100, which means it, you know, it's going to hit you with sugar pretty fast. The lentils were like 30, 26, and 24% glycemic index, or that was their...
Right.
So those particular peas and beans, they convert into sugar so slowly that I'm thinking, wow, that could actually be healthy for you as compared to something like rice cakes or wheat, which I think the world record for glycemic index is rice cakes.
Yeah,
they have a glycemic index of 150. It's just like bizarrely high.
Mm-hmm. So if we're cooking, we can... The optimum is the unrefined, but refined won't be the worst thing in the world.
You know, like anything else, if you have to start out with a refined coconut oil and sneak some unrefined in with it to kind of spike it a little bit... Isn't that what you do when you bake something at church? You spike it with what you want and let people just don't tell them what's in it, right?
Pretty much.
You know what my wife does sometimes? She winks at me at the table when she puts a meatloaf on the table, and that's her code for, I ground up some raw liver and add it to the hamburger meat, but since I put, you know, onions and bell peppers in it and spices and herbs.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, so she tricks the kids. What do you think would happen if she came to the table and said, kids, did y'all notice anything really weird about the meatloaf tonight before I served it?
but we like liver and onions, so, you know, that's a good thing.
Hey, can I tell you a quick story?
Sure.
I was at a seminar on the 29th and 30th of October at Dallas-Fort Worth, and I'm just going to give a rough estimate. There were a number of medical doctors, and it was a nutrition seminar. There were a number of medical doctors in the seminar. There was a few osteopaths. There were some nurses, massage therapists. But I would say the bulk of it were composed of chiropractors.
Right.
Which I'm one of. But sometimes chiropractors, they just love natural remedies. And, of course, all physicians probably do. I'll let you interpret that. But to make a long story short, the instructor asked a question of maybe the 200 attendees.
Uh-huh.
And he asked a question. He said, how many of you consumed liver on some type of regular basis or frequency, say once a week growing up? And I think there were 11 hands that went up.
Then he
asked in the second follow-up question, he said, how many of you consume liver once a week now? And I remember specifically there were two women and there was one man, and the instructor was just shocked, meaning pleasantly surprised at how radiant these specimens of humans were. It was just unbelievable.
Right.
And I guess maybe all this is not what I would call hardcore accurate science, but anybody that has eyes could look at those physical specimens and say, oh my word, don't they look like they're the healthiest people of all time? Now, there is one misconception that I think I should clear up.
Yes.
Almost everyone I've talked to, when I mention liver, except somebody like you, Scott, because you like liver, right?
I do.
Most people think that the liver just stores huge amounts of toxins and poisons, and so if you eat it, you're eating like a septic tank or something, or
right,
a sewage treatment. It couldn't be further from the truth. The liver does not have an ability to store. It doesn't have special pouches in it where it stores toxins. That way, when you eat it, you go, what is this black tar in here? That doesn't happen. See, the liver is a detoxifier, but it does not store it. So if you eat the liver, it's not loaded with toxins.
Right. Right.
I mean, I guess it could if it was raised by a nuclear reactor and a toxic sewage treatment plant or something.
And then the whole animal would be full of it. So,
yeah, you know, it would be full of it is right. Mm-hmm.
But so what I do with that is I cook it with how you cook, with butter, olive oil, and coconut oil combination, a little bit of each.
Now, do you put anything else on it to season it at all?
Actually, salt and pepper.
And do you grill onions first?
Yeah.
Does it? Do they make you cry?
Do they what?
Do they make you cry?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No. No. We could do this all day because, yeah.
I know.
I could
but,
talk to you about all that stuff.
But I would venture a guess that the people that have some liver and onions with some regularity, or heart, or kidney, or something else, they probably are going to be significantly stronger and healthier than those that never touch these things. And that was my observation a couple weeks ago, so...
Awesome.
We'll leave it at that.
Well, thank you so much, and
you're
I'll
sure
be
welcome.
Talking to you in the not-too-distant future.
Oh, sounds like a winner. Good deal. Well, thank you very much for calling.
Hey, thank you. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you very much, sir. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I forgot to wish him a happy Thanksgiving. I hope you have a happy Thanksgiving, sir. I talked to a lady yesterday, and what I want to do is I want to read this to you. And this may actually... what I want you to do is I read this. It won't take long at all. All I want you to do is just consider the information, and I want you to think about ways that you might could use this, not only for yourself, because I know you. You're continually thinking about others. You put other people first. You don't take offense if people don't follow your directions or take your encouragement. You keep trying to bless and help other people. But I want you to consider this. This comes from, where is it? Okay, Psychology Today. Okay, that's our starting reference point. PsychologyToday.com. In a cross-cultural analysis of the relationships between diet and mental disorders, British psychiatric researcher Malcolm Peet found a strong correspondence between high sugar consumption, increased risk of depression, and worse outcome of schizophrenia. Maybe I could interject and ask a question. If you had a child, a parent, a brother, a sister, if you had a husband or a wife, a grandchild, aunts, uncles, cousins, okay, I think I've exhausted it. That doesn't give you great pleasure to see them struggling every single day to make it. It will continually be on your mind. You're like the rest of us. You want closure. You want health conditions to be resolved. You want there to be a better outcome. I don't know anybody that hasn't been touched by mental illness. I should have said I don't know of any family that has not been touched by mental illness, or if you want to say depression, schizophrenia, bipolar. Yeah. And if I were to ask you, how many people can you think of on one hand that have had some struggle? I think all of us could probably have all five digits pointing up, acknowledging that we know of those people. Okay. Two potential mechanisms by which the consumption of refined sugar may affect mental health are suggested by Stephen Ilardi, Ph.D., co-author of The Depression Cure, and he's the associate professor of psychiatry at the University of Kansas. All right, here we go, number one. First, refined sugar suppresses the activity of brain derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF, which is a growth hormone that promotes neuronal health and plays an important role in the creation of memories by triggering the growth of new connections between neurons. Now, I don't know if that means anything to you folks, but I can tell you from visiting with people all the time, I have one young man that I'm caring for right now, and it gives me no pleasure to have him call me on the phone and explain to me that he should just end his life and kill himself, and life is not worth living, and he can't take it any longer. And we've done this about four separate unique times, and at each time, we finally have made the observation that when he overdoses on refined sugar and eats a lot of junk food, he always has these severe dips and sinking spells where he feels like, I just can't do this. I can't show up to work. This is too hard for me. And I tell you what, there's not many things more distressing than to have a person call you and tell you they want their life to be over or they want to give up. That is no fun. But I tell you what, I bet you I sound like a broken record to him. Because I tell him over and over, I said, the best thing that you can do tomorrow morning is eat a hearty breakfast that does not involve sugar. I said, even if you have to go, and what he's been doing, he told me he's been going to a grocery store near where he lives called Whole Foods. And I think he said he's been getting eggs and I can't remember. Anyway, but instead, it takes him about 4 days to kind of come out of this severe, severe depression where he feels like he's having panic attacks and anxiety and he wants to become withdrawn. And he just has this continual feedback loop going through his brain that I can't do this. I can't make it. I just need to go ahead and end my life, which... But I think he's starting to listen to me because he's called me and given me some feedback. Saying, and he's in a different state, so he's not listening to this program, most likely. If he is, he knows I'm rooting for him. Are you kidding me? But to make a long story short, he has observed that if he eats a very hearty breakfast that's based on mainly fat, why do you think we talked about eggs earlier? It's because eggs are 65% pure fat. I just think it's totally nuts that people would take the egg yolks and toss them because they're afraid of fat. Folks, you're just setting yourself up for health problems by doing that. Yes, you may be the world's greatest trainer and bodybuilder or tremendous athlete, but I know what's going to happen. Your body's just going to continually break down. You're going to have one injury after the other. And you'll just wonder, well, why did I tear another muscle? Or why did this joint blow out? Well, you got to have fat. I'll leave it at that. But I've noticed an observation with this young man that I'm helping take care of is that he really starts to do better. And he can verbalize to me. He said, I don't have this severe depression that I did have. I really think everything's going to be all right. Well, wouldn't you say if a person tells you 4 days later, after they said they wanted to take their life, that all of a sudden now that everything's going to be all right? But they've noticed when diet, and what I should say is, I know I'm cutting in this article, and forgive me, it doesn't matter because everybody's wired differently. I mean, you could tell me all day long that you just do great when you eat donuts every day and you have 2 Red Bulls and you smoke 2 packs of cigarettes and you drink 13 Mountain Dews a day, and you really don't really require nutrition, and you've got some high-sugar beech nut chewing tobacco that you chew on. That's fine. I'm not going to argue with you if you don't want to talk about that. It's not my job to be your conscience. All I can do is give you information. You decide from there what you're going to do. But for him, yeah, if he has 10 donuts in the morning, it's going to wreck him for the next 4 days. That's about how long it takes to undo all these horrible inflammatory reactions within his brain. And this is what I want you to consider. Every human being is different. So for some people, when they eat sugar, where is their weak link in the chain? Well, maybe it's the brain. And maybe some of it has to do with genetics and what genetic strength or weakness we inherited from our parents and grandparents. It's still true. Okay. Refined sugar suppresses the activity of brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF, which is a growth hormone that promotes neuronal health and plays an important role in creation of memories by triggering the growth of new connections between neurons. That's what I was going to say a while ago, that when people eat a lot of sugar, they can't think of words easily. It's almost like they're in a fog. They can't easily recall information they've known for a long time. Or they struggle to find the right words. Has that ever happened to you? Well, I can tell you it's happened to me, so I think I'm very familiar with it. So, what if you don't have good memories? Well, maybe it's because your body didn't tolerate sugar so well. All right. It is known that brain-derived neurotrophic factor, that those levels tend to be extremely low in patients with depression or schizophrenia or bipolar. That may be kind of a key point to understand. So in your family, if you have several people that have bipolar disorder or suffer from depression, maybe we could consider that they're very low in this brain-derived neurotrophic factor. When it says it's a growth hormone, all you need to remember is this is a substance that repairs your brain and keeps it in good working order. How about that? All right, number two. So we know that this brain-derived neurotrophic factor is very low in those that have depression or mental health issues. Number two, consumption of refined sugar promotes a state of chronic inflammation of the brain, I would say, which is associated with an increased risk of depression and schizophrenia, as well as other conditions such as heart disease, diabetes, arthritis, cancer. And so this researcher by the name of Liardi, he has begun suggesting that depressed patients try eliminating sugars and simple starches from their diets. And he has found they make a remarkable improvements in mood, energy, and mental clarity when they do so. Isn't that interesting? That came from Psychology Today, July 2009. And so that I'm giving you for your consideration. So don't tell me that you've tried everything and nothing works. Because where the rubber meets the road, maybe it's what you're eating. Now, that's not the only factor. You know what I really want to say? All right. Lentils are not the problem. I just told the gentleman that called a while ago that lentils have a very low glycemic index. So if an individual had green lentils or yellow lentils or red lentils, I think green lentils, it said this morning when I read that chart that it was right at 30 for a glycemic index. That means it converts very, very, very slowly into sugar in the body. That's a good thing. And that is as opposed to eating white rice or rice cakes or white potatoes or mashed potatoes or sugar or bread. All that stuff converts very, very rapidly into sugar. I mean, all that stuff has a glycemic index of probably like 80 and above. A slice of Wonder Bread, that stuff could do you in. when we consume, it literally doesn't have to be a high sugar diet. I see people that consume things like, a couple slices of bread with almond butter on them. They may add a fair amount of honey to it. Well, in the real world, I get to put everything to the test. And if their blood sugar remains high, just look at your blood test. I would say any time that your blood sugar is above 89, you're probably inching closer to pre-diabetic status. Now, I know in the medical field, they may have the cutoff at 105, and they may say anything above 105 means you're pre-diabetic. Well, do you have a lick of intelligence that would tell you that if you're 110, are you just going to dance around the street saying, I don't have diabetes? No, you're not. Well, you might. People do that sometimes. That's another observation. Sometimes people are in denial about the state of health they have. They just can't come to terms. They don't even start the process of contemplating they need to make a change. But then again, there seems to be a lot of satisfaction and pleasure in waiting to diagnose diabetes, because that's just the way it happens. I don't recommend that, though. When we consume a fair amount of sugar, more than what we should is what I'm saying, the way that sugar is broken down, it gives off an awful lot of oxidation, which means it generates a lot of free radicals. I don't know if you know what that means, but if you listen to the news, you may hear that there is such a thing called an antioxidant. And antioxidants can be everything from vitamin C to vitamin A to beta-carotene, selenium, glutathione. You may hear that there's a polyphenol substance that's found in a red wine called resveratrol, and that's been shown to have a tremendous impact on brain health and heart health. Well, that would be true. But the main point that I want you to get is when we consume sugar, it does not burn cleanly in the body. It burns very, very dirty. Anything that burns dirty and gives off oxidants, all it's going to do is deplete you of your antioxidants, which means it's going to damage your body. It's going to deplete you and suck you dry. So, yes, you can eat a lot of sugar. But you can also look like you've been on drugs for 20 years, and you can age 10 years more rapidly than what you should by the time you're 40 years of age. You can look like you're 28 at 40, or you can look like you're 88 at 40. The choice is completely up to you. It's your choice on what you think, what you spend your time doing, how you take care of yourself, and what you put in your mouth. Well, the last time I checked, we've got to eat. So if the bulk of your diet is junk food and sugar, it's going to burn so dirty that you're going to age rapidly, and you're going to get the gift. It's not a gift at all. You're going to get all these issues from, if your weakness is the brain, well, then most likely this is going to manifest as mental illness or depression or bipolar or ADD or poor focus or concentration. You can even convince yourself that you're disabled because you can't think straight. What if the solution is very simple? Another person just may be heart disease. That may be where their weak link is. But what about fat? The reason I mentioned to the caller earlier that 54% of the calories from mother's breast milk come from fat, well, I kind of think that's an important point. If that's what we need for growth, now in full-grown adults, growth may not be the right word to think about because we think about getting bigger, but that's really not what it means. Anytime you see the word trophic, like neurotrophic, that means it grows new nerves and it repairs nerves. So human growth hormone is essential to making sure that your body can repair whatever's damaged, because invariably we're going to have damage that accumulates and we want to be able to make repairs. So the main point I'm telling you is sugar burns dirty. It gives off lots of free radicals. So it will literally soak up and deplete you of all your antioxidants. And when they run out, everything starts breaking down. Excessive inflammation. On the flip side of the coin, fat burns very, very, very cleanly. And it does not give off a lot of oxidants. And it does not generate a lot of free radicals. So it burns cleanly. If I told you that there was a heart drug that could make your heart work 40% more efficiently, I'm pretty sure, folks, that would be the top-selling drug in all the universe. If they could make a claim like that, you could probably name your price. I'm sure there would be a patent on it. They would own the rights to it for 17 years or whatever the patent office says. And they would make trillions of dollars off that one drug. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but when fat is burned cleanly, the heart operates 40% more efficiently. I don't know what that means to you for me to say that, but you have to decide. Yes, you can try to convince me that this is just your fate and your destiny to have 17 stents put in your heart. What if a cardiologist says, you know what, I could write a book about you? Well, this is not meant to be a negative conversation, but what if it's more simple than that? What if it's just the high-sugar diet that you're eating, along with the genetic weakness, is contributing to all your problems? What if that could all be reversed by just eating more cleanly, meaning eating more fat? Well, okay, I've talked long enough. By the way, I'm talking about fat. Didn't the caller ask about cooking with coconut oil? Yeah, coconut oil burns clean, buddy. Clean. 903-586-5257. All right, it took me a while to stretch out all the way over to the phone and push the button, but I got it. Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you?
I'm fine.
You know, if you call my office, I can't contact you unless you leave your phone number.
I know.
Okay.
Well,
I knew you knew that.
I've known you since you were a little boy, so I guess I know it. Listen, the doctor said I had a basal cell carcinoma on my nose, not under my bridge, you know, where my glasses mm-hmm. go, but just a little lower down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do you know any way to get rid of that without having them cut it out?
Well, with 100% certainty, yes.
How?
Do you have a pencil handy?
Well, yes.
All right. The product is called Curaderm. I'm trying to make sure I can spell it. I think it's spelled C-U-R-A-D-E-R-M. Curaderm.
Curaderm. Okay.
Yeah, Curaderm. That's it right there.
It's a salve.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And you buy it where?
Well, probably on the internet. It's not cheap, but it works. It has 100% success rate for basal cell and squamous cell carcinomas. And it will, if you use it the way that it's recommended, it will completely dissolve it down to the root. And I'm going to give you a bonus point today. If I'm going to give you multiple choice. It's made from garlic, onions, or eggplant. Which one would you guess?
Garlic.
It's made from eggplant.
Eggplant?
It really is. It contains these alkaloid compounds that are just naturally highly occurring in eggplant, but it works like a champ.
You know, in the old days, we had a black salve that, you know, yeah. I don't know what that was made of. But
well, bloodroot.
And it would, you know, you'd put that on a lot of things, but
yeah.
You can't buy that anymore.
Well, you can if you do it on the internet, but the bloodroot is like anything else. Some years they have bumper crops, other years, but I think it's been really, because of the weather patterns, it's been harder to come by. But this product called Curaderm, there's actually a book written about it called The Eggplant Cure. I have a copy of it in my garage.
Well, do you just put it on regular? Is that the...
Yep, that's all you do. But all you do is you're trying to get coverage just on the basal cell carcinoma. You don't put it on healthy skin, so it's not like this is a facial cream that you rub all over your cheeks and lips and, you know, forehead and ears and stuff. No. You're just applying this. You're trying to target that basal cell carcinoma, so its application is going to be right onto that.
This friend of mine said if you would put a black grape, put a Band-Aid over a black grape and put on it, but I...
You mean like a muscadine or something, or Mustang grape?
I really don't know which kind. She just said a black grape.
Well, I was just thinking about the kinds that grow around the house, you know, next door to me.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go to the store and buy a black grape, it's going to be a hybrid grape without seeds, probably.
Right.
Well, and there may be something to it. I'm pretty open-minded.
I don't know. I have did that a few days, but it, of course, you know, doesn't...
Well, even what I'm telling you, this is probably going to be more like 4 to 6 weeks to completely dissolve it. And it will over time. It will completely dissolve the tumor or the cancer. And if I'm not mistaken, they have exactly 100% success rate when you give it sufficient time. But then again, I think you're pretty agreeable to the idea that if you want to heal, it takes a little time to get the job done.
Where do you go in on the internet? Do you just go in on medicine or what?
If you were just to type in the name Curaderm, probably the first three ads you're going to get, you're probably going to get Amazon.com, eBay, or any other vitamin retailers.
Oh, okay.
I'm guessing. I don't have my phone with me, but that's the way I like it.
Okay, well, I'm just, you know, not real up on all that.
Well, why don't you ask your daughter Sue to look it up in her free time? I mean, usually when I walk past her in Walmart, she's just, usually reading a magazine or something.
Yeah, right.
Ha, 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 ha. No, she's never. She's always working.
She would love it.
They probably keep her very busy, don't they?
Yes. You know, I was going to tell you something about, 2 or 3 months ago, I was in the granary trying to find some probiotic for this friend of mine, and I saw a lady that looked so much like your mother, and so I said it real loud. I said, not real loud, but I said, Dr. Morgan said, and she turned around real quick and she said, that's my son. And she said,
that's
this
funny.
Is his son. And your boy was there. He sure is a nice-looking young man.
I had nothing to do with that.
I know. I know it's all your wife.
Yeah.
But well, he was a nice-looking.
Well, thank you very, very much. That's very sweet of you.
She said he was visiting, and her, and they had came over there, and I thought that was kind of neat.
Well, good.
I used to see her at the library a lot, and so I thought, sure, that was her, but I didn't want to just walk up to her and ask her.
You mean the old railroad depot?
Yeah.
The Frankston Library.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
She used to come in there and get copies or something. That was years ago when I worked a little up there. Dr. Morgan, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. This is going to work out great for you.
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, if you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. You know what? I think I'll waste your time. When I was a boy, I think I did just about anything I could for work, but I got a job cleaning out under the railroad depot, and I found a couple of bottles that had Alva Edison's name on them. I thought that was interesting. All right, Dr. Morgan here. Welcome to the program. How can I help you?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you? I'm doing great. How are you, sir?
Very well. I called probably about several months ago with regard to an issue of just eating food and starting to itch. And it's like, I mean, there's like no spot on my body that I don't feel this itching. And I've kind of relegated it down to wheat, possibly grains.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems to be a constant thing. And then if I take a couple Benadryl, it'll kind of go away, so like I can take that at night and wake up in the morning and have them with
you. Yeah, you can do that, but it's going to lead to tremendous decline in mental acuity. If I had to say the number one drug of all time that probably causes Alzheimer's or dementia, it'd be anything with Benadryl, antihistamines.
Mm.
So I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just trying to say we got to find a different solution for you. So have you actually given up wheat totally?
I'm like 95 or more percent off of it.
Well, if you think it's related to it, it's going to take completely 100%. You're going to have to be compliant 100% for 2 months if wheat's the culprit. If you and the reason why I say that is because there's a lot of people that are developing autoimmune diseases that are related to wheat consumption. And I realize this is a deep topic. I'm just going to try to oversimplify it for you. But if your immune system finds wheat very offensive and starts generating antibodies against it, then your body can release histamines and bradykinins and cytokines and other chemicals that'll just make you itch like crazy because your immune system is getting overly fired up or hypersensitive to it. But it takes easily 2 months of no wheat consumption to get your body to stop producing antibodies against it. That means if you're 95% perfect, great. However, that 5% is just going to keep your body, your immune system in continual turmoil. That's one of the reasons why when they followed people with celiac disease for 20 years, they had only two categories they looked at, those that had total avoidance of wheat and those that had just one cookie or one cupcake or one cracker a month. That was it, just one time a month. That would probably be 99.9% wheat-free, but they had 7 times the death rate and other problems compared to those that had total avoidance, because even once a month is enough to tell your immune system, let's generate some more antibodies against wheat, and that's where it can settle in your skin and cause horrible inflammation. It takes about 2 months to get that down.
It's interesting, though, because could other things also mimic this? Because it seems like maybe nuts, sugar,
The one thing I want you to look into, most likely if this is the case with multiple foods, then you would most likely have a condition that's referred to as leaky gut syndrome. Sometimes in medicine it's called a hyperpermeable gut, but if you'll just type in the word leaky gut, see if that doesn't ring true, because if you're losing tolerance, you know what the word tolerance means, don't you?
Sure.
You eat something and it's agreeable to you, no issues, it feels fine. But if you eat that one thing and you go, oh my word, what was I thinking? Why did I eat that again? I should have known better. A large pepperoni pizza before bedtime just doesn't agree with me. I'm burping. You would say, hey, I just can't tolerate that. But if you have a leaky gut, then particles of food are passing through your gut, getting into the bloodstream, and then your immune system has no choice. It's going to start activating the immune system to help scoop up any nuts or seeds or anything that makes it through, like a peanut, for example. Can I tell you some fascinating research?
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I'm pulling your leg. I was in Walmart, and there was this bag by Sporting Goods saying, peanuts drive hogs crazy, and I was thinking, really? You're going to buy a lot of peanuts and spread them out in your deer stand to get pigs to come? Anyway, that's a waste of your time. But leaky gut syndrome is what I would look into. And one of the ways you fix that is by increasing fat content. See, all babies on Earth are born with leaky gut syndrome. Their digestive tract is not fully developed. I mean, if you have little kids, your wife didn't give birth to a baby one day, and then you say the next, hey, let's cook a T-bone steak and feed the little guy. He'll love it. Because it's just not, he's got a very immature gut. But all children are born with a gut that's very, very leaky. So what does God give them in his great intelligence? A high-fat diet. And so I believe that if we have gut issues, then I want to err on the side of getting more fat. And you've got lots of choices. What if you want to start making smoothies for yourself and you start adding coconut milk to the smoothies? That'd be fat. What if you'd like to add olive oil? That would be fat. I do that just about every day myself. Well, not every day, but when I make a smoothie several times a week, I'll just pour olive oil in it. I got to do it with the kids not watching, because if they want some of it, they go, gross, Dad, that's olive oil. So I just do it. I say, hey, look out there. There's Sasquatch running across the backyard. Then I just go pour it in. They don't even know it's in there. So between butter and coconut oil, extra virgin olive oil, the fat that comes from nuts and seeds and avocados, the wonderful fat that comes from animal products, so the gentleman caller earlier talking about liver and onions, yeah, that's pretty, got some good fat in it. Salmon, great fat. Grass-fed beef, that's great fat. So those are some ideas.
Well, it's interesting. Last night I had a yogurt, but it was sweetened with stevia, and it's supposed to be, you know, one of the better yogurts, and that made me itch.
Well, if you have a leaky gut, the protein that's found in yogurt called casein or lactobumin, that'll just totally irritate you if it gets into the bloodstream. It's just it's not supposed to. But if a person had a leaky gut, that's what would cause or generate all the stuff you're dealing with right now.
So a high-fat diet, and I'm understanding this, is that going to cure this thing so that I can get back to normal, or is it just something I'm going to have to maintain?
You're gonna have to just kind of trust me on this first statement, but you're welcome to challenge everything that I say, put it to the test, research it, look it up. But I always think if there's a... let me start over here. You know how if you were to walk in the backyard today and you... step on a sticker or a grass burr, I mean, that's going to hurt, right? And when you pull your foot up and you pull the sticker out, yeah, it hurts to come out, and maybe there'll be a drop of blood, but it's normal for your immune system to have an inflammatory response to that sticker or thistle in your foot. And what that inflammatory response tells your body is, let's send a whole bunch of white blood cells down there. It'll even be kind of red, inflamed, and sore and tender, right? Of course. But the purpose is to go down there, and so if there's any foreign invaders that have come in on the end of that grass burr, your body can scoop up the toxic bacteria or parasites or virus. It can remove whatever dirt or debris, can just gobble it up. But once it's done that, it's healed. I mean, 5 days later, you can't even look on your skin and see where there's been a grass burr that's jabbed and caused bleeding. But what I'm referring to is excessive inflammation. When we have excessive inflammation, that is bad, 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 bad for us. And so without even realizing what you're doing, If I had to just make a list right now and I said, what are the three or four most inflammation-producing foods in the body, I'd have to say wheat number one, probably dairy products number two. Well, I probably should say sugar or and or high fructose corn syrup number three. Number four, I'd probably say any use of vegetable oils. That would be corn, soybean oil, peanut oil. What do they call it? Canola? Comes from the rapeseed. All those generate severe amounts of inflammation. So I go back to my earlier training back from the 80s, where there is no inflammation, there is no symptoms whatsoever. You feel great. The only time we ever have symptoms is if an organ system begins to break down at a faster rate than what it can repair. And that's because of excessive ongoing inflammation within that organ. Nobody walks in my office saying, I feel like somebody punched me under my right rib cage, and then all of a sudden they pass 4,200 gallstones. No, that's been going on for a long time. But after they feel good, they can look back and say, you know what, I know now, that really bothered me for 3 or 4 years before I really paid attention to it. So I know that you've got a lot of inflammation, and it may be that some of the foods that you're eating are generating inflammation. So all I'm suggesting to you is, whether it's all the chemicals and processed food, or if it's corn or wheat or dairy or sugar or vegetable oils, I'm just asking you to drop those right now. And there's a couple of ways you can do this. Some people do very, very well with a paleo-style diet. Sometimes it's called the caveman diet. I don't get hung up into that stuff. The hunter-gatherer diet. But so, just for kicks today, if you were to get on the internet and look up paleo recipe books or paleo food diet recipe guidelines, you might look at some pictures of different foods that are prepared, and you might go, wow, I'll eat that. But usually what I'm after, I try to eat higher fat cuts of meat. So that's the reason why if you went to the store and said, I would like a grass-fed New York strip steak or a ribeye steak or a T-bone steak, that was going to have over 50% fat. I'm just trying to recreate what babies eat, sort of. If there was breast milk available to you for a smoothie that you could make, I'd tell you where to buy it, but that doesn't exist. So you're trying to do some damage control to repair your leaky gut. And if we can do that, we're removing the thorn in the flesh on why you have so much inflammation. All wheat is doing is generating horrible inflammation in your body. I can say the same about sugar. It may be kind of rare, but I probably see about 6 cases a year that it's corn, where corn's the problem. Everybody's different. Everybody's unique genetically. Some people don't react negatively to wheat. I'm finding fewer and fewer of those. So just consider that. But if you ate more of a real food diet, meaning unprocessed meat and vegetables, I mean, would you eat an omelet if your beautiful wife got up extra early and made you one?
Oh, that would be wonderful, except I usually make her the omelet.
Is that why she calls you her beautiful husband?
See, I'm not sure about that.
No, but that's when your diet is mainly, the chief ingredient is fat. Everything will start healing and repairing much faster. That's why I mentioned earlier that when people eat more fat, their heart operates 40% more efficiently. I cannot make this stuff up. And so then you're looking at foods that contain lots of nutrients. If you're going to get rid of a problem, you got to have nutrition to solve that. I wish I could look you in the eye and say, let me give you some prednisone, buddy. Let me give you some antibiotics or some aspirin or drugs or painkiller. None of that has a lick of anything that's going to heal anything. I understand if you've fallen 3,000 feet through the air and landed in a tree and you're near death and you hit the ground from a parachute that didn't open up, maybe we would want to give you steroids just to suppress some of the horrible inflammation around your brain. But outside that, I rarely find they fix anything. I mean, I've literally heard thousands of stories of people on steroids over the years. They'll keep you from sleeping. They'll make you go bonkers. You'll have panic attacks. You'll gain a heck of a lot of weight. Your appetite will crave sugar like there's no tomorrow. But as far as really helping your body manage inflammation better, no, they don't do that. So you could cut out the junk like wheat, corn,
sugar, dairy products. You could go to more of a paleo-style diet. You could play with foods that have fat. You could say, hey, I'm a man. I just want to shovel in 3 tablespoons of coconut oil a day. Well, that would work, too. You could drink plenty of water. You could go out and you could sunbathe. You could take a dry skin brush and you could scrub your skin. That helps discharge a lot of that waste that builds up in your body. You go for a walk every day. But until we start doing things to recondition the lining of the gut, that's why some of those compounds found in the low-starch vegetables like asparagus and green beans and zucchini and yellow squash, they're so good at healing the gut. Then we can actually start supplementing you with probiotics. There's just a million ways to do this, but those are some of the simple things, and then you can have no itching. But as a general rule, it is your pancreas that makes proteases. These are protein digesting enzymes. And proteases, they help break down histamine. Your liver is what's responsible for filtering out of the blood when it builds up. So if you're having allergic response of some kind, if we don't get to the cause of it, then all we've got is lots of Benadryl or Singulair or, you know, all the Allegra, stuff like that. Does that sound too far out?
No, I'll tell you, it sounds real good. I'm going to get myself on a paleo diet. And
yeah, good.
Look for some results.
Well, you'll see some results.
I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. Have a good day, sir. Take care, man. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you.
Okay, there's a phone line open. We have 7 minutes left. 903-586-5257. That's 903 as the area code. 586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hi, my name is Wendy, and I have just been diagnosed with gastroparesis, and I was wondering if you could help me.
Well, long before you were diagnosed with gastroparesis, when's the last time that you would say you were in great working order? Or when's the last time you felt really, really healthy?
A long time.
Have you had any other diagnosis before you had the diagnosis of gastroparesis?
Fibromyalgia.
Okay.
They say I'm not diabetic. I've not been on pain meds. I do have a nasal herpes that I take Valtrex for every day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not on the normal fibromyalgia meds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have any other diagnoses.
Have you ever heard before that fibromyalgia, and this may be like a new concept, so please question me forwards and backwards, but I think some of the cutting edge information that's coming out from just very, very astute researchers would say that fibromyalgia is always associated with an autoimmune reaction. Have you ever heard that before?
Yes.
Okay. Can I give you a different take on that?
Okay.
All right. I'm going back to the stomach now for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should tell you which direction I'm going so you can follow me. There are some people, if they eat a food that their immune system kind of, it raises its dander or they don't agree with,
mm-hmm.
What may happen is the gastrointestinal tract may sort of become paralyzed and kind of shut down in an effort not to absorb the food that's coming into it. Have you ever heard of a woman getting Botox injections? I saw a woman, not anybody I know, but a woman out in public. Her eyebrows never, ever moved. It's like her eyes were permanently pried open.
Right.
And, you know, you can kind of look at somebody and tell if they have, like, expressive features because you can see their eyes and their face and the way they smile, but her face didn't move. Her mouth mm-hmm. opened and closed, but there were no facial expressions. I'm going, okay, well, I don't know that's Botox, but that's what I would guess. But you know that Botox is something that kind of paralyzes those muscles, and they inject those to kind of reduce the potential for wrinkling. Have you heard that
right.
before?
Yes, okay. Uh-huh.
So some people, that's the way that their gut responds to a food that, you know, they don't agree with.
And so just like I told the gentleman that called earlier, I think one of the, quote, cures for fibromyalgia is coming off wheat, corn, dairy, and sugar. Have you ever heard that before?
Yes, and I have. I'm pretty sugar-free, except for, I say that in natural sugar-free, I have not come off of, like, starches that can turn to sugar.
Well, let me cover topic number two then, and I'll just let you consider that. Topic number two. And I don't want this to sound too bizarre, but what I'm going to suggest is, okay, it's probably going to sound bizarre. I'm going to suggest to you is what you want is you want a gut that's just very, very happy. And when I say the gut, I'm talking about from your mouth all the way to the other end.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways that you have a very, very happy, healthy gut is if it has this thick, luxurious coating of beneficial bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
I can walk barefoot in my backyard because I have a thick, luxurious coating of St. Augustine grass in parts of it, not all of it. Some of it looks kind of bad, but I have some parts that look good, but it's like walking on a carpet. But it's just every square inch is covered with thick, luxurious St. Augustine. Of course, you could look on the other side of my stone walkway and find out that it's not looking so good. I just haven't been able to do much with that part. But what you want is you want to have this thick, luxurious coating of very beneficial microbes that have colonized your gut from your mouth all the way down. And so there are plenty of studies that demonstrate when people have gastroparesis, it is because of nothing other than they have an overpopulation or an overabundance of toxic bugs. And the reason I mentioned Botox earlier is I was really just setting you up for this conversation. If the bacteria called Clostridium botulinum, it's what produces the toxin called Botox, and that's paralyzing.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that. We know that, you know, there's been threats over the last 20 years that terrorists might put an ounce of Botox or botulism toxin in the water supply and kill 20,000 people. Well, I'm glad that hasn't happened. But it's easy to look up all the different toxic strains of organisms and find out that when they actually start producing their toxins, they're very paralyzing to the gut. So one of the things that I look at is just getting rid of the toxic germs and causing good ones to grow in their place.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of somebody taking Benadryl before?
Yes.
Okay, the reason why it's linked to dementia is because it destroys acetylcholine. And you got to have acetylcholine for smooth muscle contraction. It's not the only thing, but you also got to have it for short-term memory. You haven't taken any antihistamines, have you?
I take Claritin every day.
Okay, we're getting somewhere. So have you looked up
But I don't take Benadryl.
Yeah, but you're taking an anti-allergy medication, so that does work on suppressing some neurotransmitters and other ones in the body.
Right, okay.
Is there any chance you have been taking Claritin long before you had the condition of gastroparesis?
All my life.
Well, I don't know that I'm that smart, but I might put two and two together. But this is all solvable. And unfortunately, we have completely run out of time. But if you will, call me next week and we'll pick it back up, okay?
All right. Thank you,
ma'am. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. This is Health Essentials on KBJS.